Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Neil Zacharias, and you're listening to Eat for the Planet. On this show, we try to answer the question, how can we eat in a way that nourishes us without starving the planet? The show features conversations with food industry leaders, health and sustainability experts, as well as entrepreneurs and creative minds who are redefining the future of food. My guest on this episode is Tyler Mayores, the co-founder and CEO of Cool Beans. Tyler has spent more than 20 years in private equity investing and consulting focused on sustainable food and agriculture. After adopting a plant-based lifestyle and seeing the incredible health benefits, he wanted to continue helping to create a sustainable future of food and work to create the 100% plant-based taste adventure that is Cool Beans. This is Tyler's second appearance on the podcast. He was previously a guest on episode 113. Our focus in this conversation was all about his new company, Cool Beans, and how it is building a new category based on the philosophy of using simple ingredients with minimal processing and with no oil and sugar added. We talk about formulating packaged foods that are full with flavor and nutrition, shifting the mainstream food media narrative from biotech to beans, the need for crop diversity in our food system, soil health, transforming the conventional American food culture, and lastly, what Tyler thinks the future of plant-based food will look like. I really hope you enjoy this episode. Tyler Mayores, welcome back to the Eat for the Planet podcast.
Thanks, Neil. It's a pleasure to be back and love everything that's going on and what you've been doing. You've bringing a lot of positive vibe to the plant-based movement.
Yeah, I've been less positive lately. Not because I've lost my sense of optimism, but because I've been trying to really look back and reflect on all the progress we've made over the last 5 to 10 years. And as I've said before, we definitely have made a lot of progress. But yet, when you look at the accelerating pace of climate change, and you look at the current, you know, stats from the food industry and the meat and dairy industries, and you look at how urgently we need to tackle some of the challenges with our food system, and based on the science that I've learned, read, and understood, how we don't have too much of a time horizon to tackle all of these problems. It's easy to feel like maybe, not that we're not making progress, but maybe we aren't making it fast enough. So yeah, I've been peppering my typical enthusiasm with some amount of healthy dose of skepticism. But, you know, eventually I come back to you still have to work on something and you still have to put your energy into something. And it's probably best if you use it for something positive than something negative. So,
well, I think that the more, you know, when you're speaking to people that are in the plant-based movement or are already gone plant-based, they're already kind of doing a big part of their share, if you will. It's unfortunately the 97% of the rest of the population that we really need to dramatically cut down on meat and dairy. And we need to get the message out to them in a positive way so that they understand the impacts that are caused by animal agriculture.
Yeah, and I almost have, not to say I don't talk to people in the plant-based movement, but it's mostly about strategy and tactics. I think the folks who get it are a pretty small number, and that's also part of my reason for being less than optimistic sometimes. But it's really about bringing about a mass shift, right? And it has to happen at a systems and an industry level, it has to happen at a product level, it also has to happen at a consumer level. So We'll get into all of that. I first want to kind of take a bit of a step back. You've been on this podcast before. I guess my first question really is, how has the transition been from being an investor and watching people build and struggle building exciting companies to now transitioning into being an operator yourself?
Well, it's been a lot of fun, but it definitely it's been eye-opening as well. You learn. I've obviously known a lot of the things that people struggle with when they're trying to grow a business in the past as an investor, but living it is different. You know, it's definitely more intense. So it's been fun, and it's had some challenges and some really positive things along the way, but I wouldn't trade it. It's been great overall.
And so how long have you now been since you took on the role of CEO at...
Yeah, I actually formally went into the chair in October of last year. So it's been a little, about 8 months now, maybe. Yeah, so...
So why Cool Beans? Why did you decide to take this step? And why do you believe so wholeheartedly in the idea of this company?
Yeah, and I'm invested in several different plant-based food companies, but I really, for both the health of the planet and for the health of people, I really think that whole food plant-based is where people need to go. And what I don't think a lot of people realize is that making that change, you can actually have a lot more flavor than you do with your traditional sad American diet, right? And that's kind of the eye-opening thing that happened with me, is just the spices that you use bursting with flavor, and it just kind of completely changed my palate. And so that, in combination with the fact that we have to change the agricultural system, I just thought that there was a huge impact that a company like Cool Beans could make, making beans cool again, and really kind of bringing in a way to create good, healthy food without all the processed stuff that a lot of the other alternative companies are using.
And was it easy to formulate a product like this? Because you are kind of entering into a bit of a crowded category, I suppose. What makes Cool Beans sort of stand out in the frozen aisle?
So when we went down this road of creating products, we gave some kind of general outline to the food scientists that we used and partnered with. And we said, look, we need it to be whole, simple ingredients. We need them to be minimally processed. We want no oil and no sugar added. And she's like, okay, well, I like the challenge. I'll give it a try. And she was, hesitant, to be honest. She was worried about the no oil thing and whatnot. But then she came back with products that blew us away. She ended up coming back with things that far exceeded our expectations. What's great about our wraps that is very, very different is that if you cut them open, you actually see beans and veggies and whole grains spill out. We don't have mush. There's no mush in the middle. There's no sauce, really. It's spices that bring the flavor. And then the beans and millet or whole grains are cooked, obviously, because you have to add water and cook those. But the other items, the vegetables that have been added, whether it's cauliflower or peas or whatever, have just been, are not cooked, fully cooked yet. And they're flash frozen. All of it's flash frozen. And then it's cold rolled together and flash frozen as a unit. And so it's very minimally processed, but it's bursting with flavor. And that's really what's different about everything else on the market, is really kind of like a stew inside of a wrap, which we didn't want anything like that.
That definitely does help your product stand out. I mean, I also think that, you know, let's just look at what's been happening in food in general. I know you got interested in plant-based originally while looking into the environmental impacts of the food system. Was that a big factor when Cool Beans was launching, to think about how providing a you know, whole food, plant-based, gluten-free product in a category that firstly has very few options like that, but also providing an option to consumers who are showing more interest in plant-based eating. But if you generally survey, I would say, and the average consumer, most of them lately would, if you ask them, are they trying more plant-based, they probably are going to point to a meat alternative or a dairy alternative as the choice that they would signal as being their plant-based choice. How has that factored into your thinking, where a lot of consumers are now replacing a meal, a couple of meals a week, with a meat alternative? Where does Cool Beans come in? Who's the ideal consumer you're looking for?
Yeah. So when we formulated this, there were a couple of things going on. One, I did come to this from the standpoint of climate change. That's how I first got into becoming a vegan. And as well, I was doing a lot of research on soil health and the biodiversity, et cetera. So we came at this and we've wanted to formulate something with a lot of plant diversity in it. And it had to revolve around beans, because beans are one of the most incredible superfoods, both for our health and our gut health, but also for the soil health and the planet, because they put nitrogen back into the soil. And they're just one of the few plants that does that. And nitrogen is something that, just so everybody knows, nitrogen is something that all plants need to grow. And nitrogen is typically created as a supplement, and it's done with a very carbon intensive process to create liquid nitrogen out of the air, basically, and heating it up with fossil fuels. So we wanted to come at this centered around beans, which are great for humans and soil, and plant diversity. So if you looked at our first three wraps, there's 17 different plants that you would be getting from those. And we saw that as a way to foster diversity so that agricultural entities could plant a lot of different things. You know, obviously we have to get to be a big company, but the idea was to create markets for more plants than just the monoculture crops that so many people are into: wheat, peas, corn, soy, you know, et cetera. So that was our tenet. It turns out that also had another benefit that we learned after we launched. I don't know if you've read Fiber Fuel by Dr. Will Bolsowitz. So at any rate, he talks a lot about the plant diversity being a huge advantage for humans, and that it's almost more important than being 100% plant-based is eating 30 different plants in a week. Well, if you take our first three wraps, you get 17. The two new flavors we're adding this summer, 26. So you can basically just eat our wraps each week and you'll get 26 different plants, almost 30 plants. And that's great for the biodiversity in your gut and getting all those different types of fiber to the good bacteria in your gut.
And is your goal going to be to stay true to this original idea of, firstly, largely whole food, unprocessed or minimally processed? I mean, everything is some amount of processing, depends how you define it. And do you really see who else is in the, is there a category that you fall under? Who are you, when you're looking at your ideal consumer, what do you have in mind? Like, what are they looking for?
Yeah,
who are you trying
question.
To cater to?
Yeah. So I think we're kind of our own category right now, and we're trying to build a category. And ultimately we want to have a family of whole food plant-based products. So one of the core tenets of our company is everything we do will be simple ingredients, minimally processed. So you're never going to see, and people early on were asking us for partnerships to put fake meat and fake cheese in the product, and you're never going to see it. It's never going to happen. We're not going to put those products in. And not that I don't think they have a place in the market. They absolutely do. And I love that they're bringing people over from flexitarians, et cetera. But in our products, we're going to be focused on whole food plant-based. We want to be a way that people that are trying to eat this way have something that's prepared in the grocery store to eat. Because right before we did this, there wasn't anything. And so that's a core tenet as we kind of move forward. We do want to build a family of products. So we want to build stuff for breakfast. We want to build things I don't know if we'll ever do bowls, but we may do some variant of it because I don't like the extra waste bowls create because it's all just more stuff you throw away inside. But we're, you know, we're very waste focused and trying to minimize our footprint from that standpoint, as well as on the carbon. On a carbon footprint standpoint, we're great. We just did a calculation using myemissions.com, which is a site where you can look at your diet and plug different things in and see what your emissions are based on those diets. We are 92% less emissions than a steak and cheese burrito, and about 50% less emissions than a chicken and cheese burrito. So, yeah.
Yeah, I love the foundations on which you've built this, the idea of crop diversity, the idea of minimally processed, yet you provide it in a convenient package. I mean, as a consumer, I can tell you we need more stuff like this for sure. People want convenience. I mean, that's the reality. I wish I had all the time in the world. I don't, and I know most people don't. But at the same time, a lot of frozen, ready-to-eat meals typically are things that you probably can't eat too much of either because of the amount of preservatives and other processed ingredients that are included in it. So it's kind of an interesting... And I see why you your answer to the question was like you're kind of in a new category is because, or in some ways I can say you're maybe attempting to redefine a category, and elevate it to a level where it is expected that you can eat something that is minimally processed without being afraid that you're going to lack taste or satisfaction, which is a tall order. I mean, I was not the biggest fan of beans for the longest time, and I think. The reason for that, it really depends on how beans are prepared and how they're seasoned. And I think that's a huge win in your products as well. I think, I know you kind of launched last, sorry, go ahead.
If you compare across the category, you know, most of our competitors will have 15 to 25% saturated fat. And we have zero saturated fat in our products. Tikka masala has a small amount, 1 gram, because of coconut, not from anything else, but just the other two have zero. And our new two SKUs have zero as well. So it's, I mean, that's a huge difference.
And right now, in terms of Cool Beans, how's it going? I guess my big question is, I know it's been early days, but you seem to have a lot more distribution than before. What are the early results? How are consumers liking it?
Yeah, we're very excited. So we've been on the market basically for a year. We started going on shelf in May of last year. So we're in about 850 locations across the country. Sprouts being the largest, Wegmans being probably the second largest. We just went into Wegmans in the Northeast. We're in a few other regional chains like Deerberg's in St. Louis area and Hy-Vee in certain parts of the Midwest. And then several smaller regional chains like a Lunardi's and Market of Choice up in Portland area. And then we have several other new ones, PCC and Huckleberry's that we're going into later in the summer. So we're slowly adding chains. The turns have been good. We're very excited to see people like it, that the idea is resonating with people. And we have a growing number of stores that are turning at a very high level, and which is great. And so we just hope to, our big key right now is building brand awareness and getting trial, getting people to put it in their mouths, because once they eat it and they realize, oh my God, this tastes great, and yet it's super healthy for me. That's crazy. How is that possible?
Yeah, I can imagine a product like yours would have done so great if sampling was allowed in the time. It was safe to sample, rather.
Yeah.
And so I guess you definitely, whenever that comes back, I know it's going to, is that going to be a big part of your focus in retail? Because I can see someone wanting to try it, but not believing in the messaging until they taste it.
Right. Yes. And we do have a very high percentage of people, it's like 80 to 90% of people that try it think it tastes good or great or whatever. And so, yes, we definitely want to put it in people's mouths. Demoing has completely stopped. There's a few very small chains that are doing it, which is almost not worthwhile because it's really hard to, especially with a product like ours, where you have to have a microwave come with you. So it's not a simple demoing situation. So the alternative is there are a couple of companies out there that do digital demoing. And so they have a target cohort of people across the country. In one case, it's like 600,000 and in another, it's smaller. But they've kind of opted in to try products within their, whatever their food tribe is. And so, and if they're in a location with one of the stores where we have product, then they can get a coupon and try it. And hopefully some large percentage of those will buy again.
And what is the sort of outlook for this year? What would be the big milestones you're hoping to hit besides more brand awareness, which I can totally see that driving more consumer interest? Frankly, you know, I still go back to people just, if they tasted it, I think they will be pleasantly surprised. I mean, I was the first time I tried it.
Yeah, exactly. We need to get more demo out there. So I think 2022, there will be in-store demoing and we'll definitely participate in that. So our big goal, we want to try to get to somewhere around 1500 stores by the end of the year. And so that's, you know, still a heavy lift. We're going to have to get on it. And we want to keep continuing to increase velocities. So, you know, you start with power users and you get more and more power users within as they try it. And then we're adding these two new SKUs. And frankly, one of the SKUs, Sesame Ginger, I think has, based on the way it's been received and everybody that's tasted it, that has potential to be our best-selling SKU. Right now, Tikka Masala is our best-selling, but that has the potential to be our best-selling. So we'll see what happens. We're excited about it.
And do you consider yourself to sort of be part of sort of a new breed or a new wave of companies in the plant-based space that are perhaps catering to a consumer that wants to choose plant-based products that actually deliver on the promise of plant-based? And what I mean by the promise of plant-based is usually, if you ask most people, when they see a product labeled plant-based, they're thinking perhaps first better for them, perhaps they're thinking better for the planet. Right now, I would say some products deliver more on those promises than others. And I think time will tell where the whole sector in general will shake out. But it's pretty clear that you're sort of sitting kind of in the periphery of where all the attention seems to be in the plant-based space, which, as I said earlier, all the food tech-driven startups that are, you know, using fermentation technology, processing plant proteins, and of course now very soon we're going to see cell-based or cell-cultivated chicken on the market in the U.S. depending on regulatory approval. So given all the hype and the excitement that at least the press seems to be reporting on, is all largely about biotechnology to a certain extent, not beans. What is your response to that? I mean, I think you're trying to do is sort of different, but maybe a sign of things to come in the future as well.
Yeah, I definitely hope so. And we definitely think that more and more people are going to learn that over time. So there's a natural progression, right? You first kind of hear about whether you come over for animals, for health, or for climate, you start moving toward a plant-based, and you maybe not 100%, but you flexitarian, you become reducitarian, whatever, and you start eating less meat and dairy. And oftentimes that the food tech companies are going to be the ones that bring you over. You're going to, because it looks like what you were eating before, et cetera. And there's a huge place for those in the market going forward. It's our job then at that point in time to convince people that, you know what, it doesn't have to look like a burger to taste great. What you don't realize is that spices create a whole lot more flavor than salt, sugar, and fat that we're all grown up eating. And so it's our job to convince people to try it and find out, holy cow, this is bursting with flavor. And then there are different flavors than I expected. That's our job. That's our challenge. And we think we're going to do a good job to try to spread that word and get people out there trying. And then I think there will be other companies doing it. But right now, everybody seems to be focused on that food tech side because it's, you know, it's the most like what people are used to. But it doesn't have to be that way. Anybody that's gone 100% plant-based and starts cooking for themselves realizes, holy cow, these ingredients, if I just put these together with these spices, it tastes great. It doesn't look like a burger or anything like that.
Yeah. And so it's, you know, it's almost, I guess it leads me to my next thought, really, which is you first got into this space thinking about climate change, thinking about the impact on the environment. I know health and nutrition is also something you're deeply passionate about. What do you see as being sort of your theory of change in the food system? Where would you, not that it has to be through the lens of cool beans, maybe you can contextualize it in the lens of cool beans, but the theory of change for the alternative meat companies and others are, people are looking, they love meat, they love cheese, they want more of it. Give them something that tastes the same, looks the same, smells the same, feels the same, hopefully costs the same, and they will make the switch, and we will have all these environmental benefits and perhaps some health benefits also.
So I think that there's some critical things that are wrong with the agricultural system that need to be fixed. And one of those is diversity. We have gotten ourselves completely focused on monoculture crops. And we did that, you know, it's no one person's fault, and it's not happened recently. It's happened since the 1930s. And it really stems back to initially the Depression era and creating incentives for crops that would last a long time, corn, soybean, and wheat, in storage because they were afraid that the people were going to starve and we needed to focus on something. And so that's where it all started. And unintended consequences along the way has kind of created this system where we've got, you know, more and more meat and dairy, more and more corn, soybean, and wheat. And so I believe that we really need to get more to biodiversity. That's why I don't really want to see all of it shift over to just pea protein and then we're just growing pea protein. You know, I mean, that's not a solution either. We really need a very diverse set of crops that people are, and we need the USDA to get involved and try to create incentives for these different crops as well. So that's one big thing. We need to get back to focusing on soil health, which is partly because of that diversity, but also partly a whole lot less chemicals. I mean, we've gotten to this point where we spray glyphosate on everything, including wheat and oats, and it's just crazy and it's killing. Whether it causes cancer or not, I don't know. I mean, I trust the FDA that tested it. It probably doesn't. The problem is, at a minimum, it kills all the good bacteria in the soil. And it kills the good bacteria in your gut. And so your gut is going to be less healthy. You're going to be more susceptible to cancer and other illnesses. So we have to get away from massive spraying of things like glyphosate, which is why our products are GMO, all non-GMO. We just want to stay away from that, in particular, glyphosate in particular. And then I think that we've got to reduce the focus on meat and dairy, just in general. I love the fact that I just saw Australia for the first time had reported lower consumption of meat and dairy, or just meat maybe, which is huge. And we have to, in the US, we have to do that and all the industrialized countries. And then we have, I'm hearing good things out of China that while they were growing their meat dramatically, there seems to be a growing awareness of plant-based and it seems to be kind of hopefully stemming that tide. And those things have to be fixed or we're doomed, because we're never going to fix climate change without food coming along, because it's such a big piece of the puzzle.
So you think of your product as not necessarily just has to be about Cool Beans, but I have to bring it back to Cool Beans, because I find that the space that you occupy, which is, you know, maybe it's still early to really see the long-term impacts of what you're trying to do. But this idea of looking at the food system, knowing that it's imperfect, knowing that industrial food production does involve some negative externalities, where no matter how well-meaning a company might be or a brand might be, the very nature of food production and distribution is extractive to a certain extent. Then the question becomes, well, if we cannot completely tear down the existing system and just build a new one, which perhaps we should also try to do, but in the interim, well, how can we make it better? And I partly sometimes when I think about the urgent need to get big meat and dairy companies, if you were to identify that as being the most urgent need, right, to get them to commit to phasing out the use of livestock or reducing emissions beyond just energy, but also connected to methane and NO2 and other emissions, that we unless we get them to make to change, they aren't going to change. And just by getting them to launch a plant-based meat in itself doesn't guarantee change. And I look at and I listen to what you're saying, and it sounds like, well, you're not even trying to play their game necessarily. You're trying to create almost in early stages, because of course, as an early stage startup, you don't have complete control of your supply chain. You might want to do 100 things, but you've got to take it one step at a time. But what you're saying is that we can work within this industrialized system, but maybe create a better one by encouraging crop diversity, by encouraging soil health. And so did I capture that correctly, which is almost like way of looking at the food system almost?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, farmers at the end of the day will grow what makes them money, what puts food on their table. And so we have to create products that use a wide diversity of products, of plants, so that they will grow diversity of plants. I mean, I love what's happened with cauliflower and the whole cauliflower movement. Suddenly, you know, it's a huge crop. We need to do that with more and more crops to create crop diversity, and then farmers will follow. And so that's definitely a big part of our ethos, is to do that and foster that. And we hope a whole lot of other companies will follow.
Yeah. And it's almost, if you can convince people to eat the right kind of food because they love how it tastes, even if it doesn't necessarily replicate anything that they're used to eating that is probably not good for them, it does. It's a harder proposition, right? The simpler thing is eat a burger. It's just made of plants, tastes the same, has salt, fat, and.
Well, I don't know if you know, but there are tens of thousands of edible plants. And yet the average American probably eats 10 a week, and they're the same 10 every week, right? That's crazy. And all those plants are edible, and some of them are really good for you for different reasons. I mean, they all have different things that they bring to the table. Why aren't we eating other ones? You know, why aren't people eating collard greens and things like that that are just incredibly nutritious? Cabbage, one of the most nutritious things you can have. How many times does somebody eat cabbage? I would guess they're Americans that never have eaten it. You know, it's crazy.
And it's also partly cultural, right? It's a lot of what we are just used to eating, what we consider to be, in this country at least, what we consider to be quick, fast food is, as you said earlier, stuff that typically falls under the standard American diet. It's mostly salt and fat and sugar. And you know, for example, even if you try to eat some, most Asian cuisines, you'll find an abundance of vegetables. Even if they do use meat, they still make it with a lot of vegetables. That's just not a thing over here. It's never been a thing in this country, as far as I can remember. Or at least that's what the food industry has emerged
into. It was
in
the South. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was in the South, of course, especially the Southeast. And, you know, a lot of the slaves basically created huge diversity of plants in their diet because that's what they could get. And unfortunately, it didn't spread throughout the country. And frankly, I don't know. I mean, 200 years ago, it might have been. It might have been the average person was eating 30 different plants in a week. But I'm sure now it's most are probably eating less than five. It's crazy.
And so then
potatoes is probably a big part of it.
Yeah, potatoes for sure. But then I guess the question becomes, how do you make plants exciting? If it's because it's not as simple as telling people don't eat beef, eat beans, because most people won't know what to do with a can of beans. And so therein lies the challenge of what if you can actually. Oh, I'm literally playing into your marketing tactic now by saying, That's what right. if you can actually make it cool to eat beans?
I'll give it to you in a wrap style, and it's got a lot of spices, and it tastes great. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah, but I can see you've got a steep hill to climb right now. I can see you can probably do really well within the health-conscious consumer base that is looking for better for you options, that is looking for clean label options. I'm sure that's an easy... first category of consumer to get into, as well as obviously the vegans and vegetarians and perhaps other health conscious audiences, but the consumer bases. But then the challenge then is, how do you get the average Joe who's afraid of beans or thinks they don't like beans to give it a try?
Yeah, that's definitely our challenge. And we've got to do a lot of marketing to do that. The great news is every time we do that and I can just speak for myself with friends and family members and things like that are not plant-based, but they try it and they're like, oh my God, these are great, and start buying them all the time. And that's what we need to do, is just, again, put it in people's mouths and tell them how nutritious it is. And oh, by the way, taste that. Then we think a lot of them will convert.
So as an as a former investor and current, you still do angel investing, I know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How has your approach been? Because I think the reason I ask that is because the simpler bet may seem, from an investor standpoint, may seem, put the money into, I'm going to try to oversimplify this question. It's not a simple question though. Put the money into the burger replacements and the cheese replacements. And, you know, those are the ones that are probably going to achieve the widest amount of consumer adoption quick enough, which will then lead to open up the path to exit for that company. So as an investor, probably a safer bet to bet on a company that you know is replacing most of the foods that people are used to eating. Maybe there's a bigger market out there, and they get acquired or they go public. But when you place a bet into, say, a whole food plant-based product, even if it is convenient and it is frozen and it solves some problems for people, you still have this added layer of consumer education, brand awareness. You're kind of almost trying to bring about a cultural shift, because a lot of your products are spiced. Some people not even used to that in this country. So from an investor standpoint, what was your rationale? Because you were an investor in Cool Beans before you became the CEO. I'd love to understand that, because people often give investors, they often oversimplify what investors do. So what was your rationale for, if you're going to place a bet on something, why bet on something that maybe has a longer, slower path to success than...
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, we definitely looked at this as a long game. We're definitely playing, for the future on this. We knew that, and I would differ a little bit in what you're saying, what's safer. If you would have looked at it 5 to 10 years ago, I would say meat alternative would have been safer. Right now, I would not want to introduce a meat alternative. I don't know how those people are going to get shelf space. It's just crazy, unless they're going to just sell it through direct to consumer. There are so many of them out there, it's nuts. But the analogy I would use is, if you think about what happened in kind of the 80s and 90s, where you kind of converted away from Swanson's TV dinners to Healthy Choice to Lean Cuisine. And then from there, they converted to Evol and some of these in a natural progression of cleaner and cleaner. I think we're going to see the same thing in plant-based over time. And so we're playing the long game, you know, as Wayne Gretzky says, go where the puck is, you know, pass to where they're going to be, not where they are right now. And that's what we're trying to do, because we see people, once they get to plant-based, yep, it's great. But that's not what they're talking about in Forks Over Knives. That's not what they're talking about in Game Changers. They're talking about whole food plant-based, and I'm not there yet. So
that's interesting. I love that you brought up the shelf space issue. I've kind of brought that topic up in previous conversations lately. It is a challenging question, right? Because you look at the pace at which companies are launching products, and then you look at the realities of retail. Those things don't add up right now. Like, what? I wonder, is it just, and this is just my speculation here, is that, do they not understand how the food industry works? that you need, because in the end, they're going to have three or four brands that'll stand out in each category. That's just by virtue of, one, is this lack of space. Second, even if you, and a lot of companies have tried e-commerce and direct-to-consumer, it's not an easy business to do either, depending on the product, of course, and depending on how do you work out a shipping solution. But
especially for frozen.
Especially for frozen, which most of the replacement products tend to be, at least on the meat side. So I do think it's where you're, and I'm glad you kind of sort of reframed my view of things, which was maybe it was true that a meat alternative was a safer bet a few years ago. But now when you look at what's happened just in the last 5 years, you've got to start asking what is next as an investor, or even as someone who's looking to start a company or be an entrepreneur.
Now, it may be that all of the meat alternative companies are banking on taking 50% shelf space from meat. And maybe that's where it's going to come from. Maybe they think that the meat case is going to become half plant-based. And I hope that it does. And maybe it will. I'm not real bullish on that in the near term, but I hope it happens. But it's a big if.
It is. It is a big if. And it's if you, and maybe it's too early to say this, but if you look at all the data from the meat industry itself, they don't show any signs of slowing down meat production. So unless there's a drastic shift from a consumer standpoint and or a, you know, way more pressure from a policy standpoint, they really have no incentive to change their ways. They'd rather, as you're seeing now happen, you not only have retailers launching private label brands, but you have, of course, the big meat and dairy companies themselves launching their own plant-based brands, which is just going to squeeze out the smaller guys in the short term, and probably in the longer term, depending on your product and your brand value that you've developed. So it's a fascinating space to look at. Do you have did you consciously choose not to invest in that space because you just didn't see the future there, or were you?
No, I was pretty, I think I was late to the game on that, certainly on the Beyond Meat or Impossible. So didn't have opportunities to invest in those. It was opportunities to invest in Just, which I like a lot. But at those point in time, I tend to be more of an earlier stage investor. And when the valuations, you know, get into the hundreds of millions, that's not really me. I don't do angel investing at that stage. So I really didn't do that. And I wouldn't at this point probably invest. I haven't invested in any of the newer meat alternatives. I've invested in some of the cheese alternatives. Usually they have to have a pretty strong angle that I think makes some sense, like Sparrow, which, you know, is seed-based versus nut-based. And I think that seeds are much more sustainable food than nuts. So But other than that, I haven't, no.
Yeah. So, you know, that's why I always like talking to you, because you have a very, I would say, clear-headed view of things in the food system. I mean, part of it, you're practical. At the same time, you don't necessarily, you're not willing necessarily to cut the corners. Like, we've always had these conversations in the past of, like, what are we trying to achieve first and foremost? We got to be clear on that. If you want people to be healthier, if you want you want to slow down the pace of climate change, we've got to, we cannot replace one destructive system with another destructive system. You have to work on improving it, and not just marginal improvements. You've got to start thinking about radical improvements. And I think, you know, in a sense, what you're, what Cool Beans is, and I'm using Cool Beans as an example of your general sort of ethos around food. And I think of it as being somewhat radical, in the sense that you're not willing to take the tougher path to where you think people need to go, and in some ways pave that road also, so that others can follow behind you, and you end up actually creating space for a new way of eating and a whole new category of foods. I do think that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, let's hope. Let's hope others follow behind, and we do that, because it would definitely be better for humans and better for the planet, for sure.
So what is your take on where things stand today, environmentally, with our food system? This is, of course, we're still sort of in the midst of the pandemic, but hopefully the worst is behind us. It's made me question a lot of my assumptions of what I need to spend my time and energy on when it comes to food and fixing problems with the food system. And it was became even clearer to me that business as usual just will not do anymore. So what has the last year kind of done for you? Of course, you've taken on this whole new responsibility, and I'm sure that's 110% of your focus. But where do you see the 2020s leading with food and changes in our food system?
Yeah, well, I think that what 2020 did was highlighted the risk of the animal agriculture industry. I mean, we all knew what the impact it had on climate and water. What I don't think a lot of us realized was how a pandemic can shut down the economy. Because before this, I certainly bought into the concept that we could have a bad pandemic and it would kill a lot of people, and we've seen Ebola and things like that. But I didn't really understand, and I doubt many people did, that the whole idea of shutting the economy is massive. And that's the only way to distance people and to slow the spread. And boy, I don't know that we could afford to go through another one of these, certainly in the next 5 years. And yet every day we have an animal agriculture system that's focused on factory farming with billions and billions of animals, we run the risk of another one popping up next year. So that's been the eye-opening experience from COVID for me.
And do you see any signs of that changing or slowing down? I don't see any. That's going back to what I said in the beginning about my pessimism lately. Pessimism.
Yeah, I see huge signs of a movement toward plant-based diets as the age goes down. So, you know, it's somewhere around 3% of the population is identifying as vegan overall, 9.7 million or something like that. But if you looked at millennials, it's closer to 6%. And if you looked at Gen Z, it's closer to 10%. So there's definitely a trend in the right direction. The numbers that you mentioned are disturbing in that meat consumption or meat sales have gone up over the last year. I think in part that's because of the price increases. Prices have gone up pretty dramatically in meat and dairy. And so that maybe fueling it to some degree. But, you know, if you see those trending in population that are identifying as plant-based, you would think that that's eventually going to start showing a sign of decrease in meat and dairy. And I'm hoping that that starts soon.
Yeah, you have to be hopeful, right? And I think it's, what do you think is going to be the first, I think of these as like three, if you want to build a better food system, you've got to have three pillars to build this new structure. You need the pillar of the food itself, which is all the food companies are doing, such as yours, and including the meat replacements and perhaps the cell-based and other options that exist in the market. The second pillar is you do need some amount of policy change, right? Without that, you're never going to... Right now, the incentives are for commodity crops. They're not for diverse crops. It's just the whole farming system is upside down at the moment. So that also needs to change. Without that, you cannot really have any hope to build a structure. And the third pillar is very connected to the first two, is you've got consumers who have to change the way they eat. And you can't have one without the other. So if consumers don't change, you have the you have the new products, the policy isn't going to work either. So all policy can't change without new products being on the market. So you kind of have to do all at once, but yet they have to perfectly work together. And it all has to happen within the next couple of decades.
Yeah, no, I agree. We really need Washington to get on board and remove the subsidies for meat and dairy. I think that would be a huge first step. If you could just remove those so that they're priced the way they're supposed to be priced in the market, as opposed to abnormally low, that would change consumption dramatically. So I think that's given that their goal is to reduce and mitigate climate change, you would think that that would fit very well with what they're trying to do, try to meet climate, the Paris Climate Accord, et cetera. So I think that's a critical element. I think that the consumers are moving in the right direction. We definitely see a lot more movement from the food companies trying to introduce plant-based things. They all seem to be looking kind of similar right now, but over time, I think people will diversify that a bit. But yeah, I agree. It's got to happen fast, and we got to move it forward quickly.
And to what extent, in the approach that you're taking with Cool Beans, are you thinking about where you source the ingredients? I know you said that that diversity of crops is important, non-GMO is important. And again, you're still a small startup at this stage. So you probably do have some constraints in terms of choosing suppliers. But what is the grand vision with Cool Beans? Like if you could achieve the milestones and the goals that you've set for the next year or two or three, what would your ideal state be as a company? Where would you want to see it go?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, all of our products currently are sourced within the U.S. except for some spices. So some of the spices that don't come from the U.S. And we would like that to continue. We don't have a huge, because we are a small startup, we're not, you know, sourcing a lot of those directly. Over time, we would like to. We'd love to help to foster regenerative farming, and we'd like more of it to be organic. But you know, that's going to take time for us to be in a position where we have enough volume to really move the meter and whatnot. But that's definitely our long-term goal, and to have, you know, again, a diversity of these plants, so that we're fostering a farming system where we're engaging a lot of different farmers to convert over from something else to another plant that creates diversity, crop diversity.
So in some ways, you're also trying to generate demand for this whole market for more plants, really, versus just replace one monoculture with a maybe slightly better one.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so what would you like listeners who have not tried one of your products, what would you like to tell them in terms of why Cool Beans is not just the delicious option to choose, but why is it the right one?
Ah, that's a good question. Yeah, I mean, I think that eating a diversity of plants is the best thing for your gut health. And first of all, beans, just beans and legumes in general. There's, you know, they're not really called a superfood, but they are absolutely probably the number one superfood because their fiber only comes from plants. It doesn't come from animals, animal meat or dairy. And fiber is critical for your gut. That is the only thing that creates short chain fatty acids, with acids that basically fight cancer, fight disease, et cetera. It controls your whole immune system. And it also controls your mental health because all of your serotonin is made in the gut lining. So having a diversity of plants that includes a lot of fiber rich foods like leafy greens, like beans and legumes, nuts, et cetera, is critical for overall human health. And then the benefit is it's also critical for soil health because you need a diversity of plants to really, they all put a different nutrient into the soil, which helps the other plants. And so you're really feeding both systems by eating, you know, the cool beans wraps and the diversity of plants that we bring to the table.
Well, Tyler, I love what you're doing. I think not only are the wraps amazing, and I'm a fan, but I also think your approach to solving some of our problems are kind of unique and different. And I think in time, as more people explore the variety of options that exist in the plant kingdom, thanks to products like yours, we may have a hope of actually finding a way to build a better food system, even within the constraints of our current model. At least maybe that might be, you know, if you want to be optimistic, that's probably the only way we can get there. So I think you're spending time and energy on the right things, and I appreciate what you're doing, and I always enjoy talking to you. So thanks for being on today.
Well, thanks very much, Neil. It's always a pleasure, and it's always a fun, interesting conversation with you. And I wish you all the best of luck with Plantega. I love what you're doing there. And thanks again for having me.
You've been listening to Eat for the Planet with Neil Zacharias. If you enjoyed this conversation and would like to show your support, all you have to do is subscribe to this show and rate and review it. To learn more about this podcast or my work, go to eftp.co. That's eftp.co. Thank you for listening.